Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a good one.
It's going to be a great one, and we find ourselves here in the salt mines while the A-team is out
and about
in the field covering the Small Business Matters Conference. So I know they're having a good time. I know they're capturing a lot of good content, but I think we can best them with the guest lineup that we have today. Don't you think we can best them?
Yeah, definitely. The quality here is A+.
So a little bit later in the program, we are going to get a chance to hear from Partner Technology Director with Saul, Creative Solutions for an Interactive World, Adam Rosenkotter. Am I saying it?
There's no way it's Saul. It's Soul, right?
It's Soul.
Soul.
Yeah. And Rosenkotter, but you were close.
I wasn't even close.
Like 0-2. Great start.
Well, we've had our other guest in the studio before, so maybe I'll pronounce her name properly. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast VP of Service Delivery for Government Contractors Association, Ms. Myra Siss. Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I got to ask, did I do the last day right?
No, it's Tuesday.
Damn.
I answered to anything, though, so okay. It's okay.
0-4.
So this is a pro tip for other radio hosts. Always ask the guests how to pronounce their name before you actually begin the show. So
yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. So, Myra, why don't you share a little bit about what your work is like at the Government Contractors Association?
Certainly. We at the Government Contractors Association, we have a mission to educate, to facilitate, and to advocate. And basically what we do is work with small businesses that want to transition their business into the government area. So
that sounds scary.
I really know.
Transitioning my business into what?
Well, I mean, just the government. The government is the largest purchaser of goods and services in the world. But I
just want them to pay me for some services. I have to transition?
Well, no, you don't have to transition your entire business, but just kind of add a segment of your market.
Oh, so it's not that simple to just say, we do radio, so if you want to have a radio show, call me. You can't do, it's not like that?
Not really. I mean, the government is kind of a totally different animal. I mean, they do business differently. They have a different culture. And, you know, most of us kind of grew up in the corporate world.
Right.
So you,
is that what your background is?
Exactly. I was a banker for 20 some odd years. So I've worked at every major bank in the city. And because I was doing SBA loans for my bank clients, I came to understand some of the SBA criteria
that
I have to deal with all the time now. But it is a totally different world for somebody that's just transitioning where they, let's say they do janitorial services and they work with Coca-Cola and UPS and all that. Now they want to try to sell their services to government.
So they can do the same activity, but just at a government building.
Exactly. For the IRS building or the CDC or whatever. And it's just, you know, they find themselves in a quagmire that's totally unfamiliar.
And is that's just built into the bureaucracy of dealing with the government? There's lots of departments, there's lots of people that have to be on board, and there you probably have official, you can't just say, here, want to buy my stuff. Probably have to do a proposal of some kind.
Exactly. There's a whole proposal process, and you know, they have to solicit it, put it out for bid, and then there are these whole things called set-asides that you may qualify for as business owners. So it's a whole different language that you have to learn to speak that Abe, our founder, lovingly calls governees. So you have to learn to speak governees
like that
in order to do business in the government. It's like trying to go to do business in China without a translator.
Right.
So what we do at the Government Contractors Association is we become that translator for you.
But are you an association that serves businesses, or are you a service that I buy to help my company get government work?
We are an association that serves the business owners. And in serving the business owners, we do a plethora of things because we've discovered that someone that wants to do business in the government, they run into a number of different challenges. One, they don't understand how to speak the language. So we have courses that help teach them how to do that.
So part of your mission is to educate.
Exactly.
So a person doesn't necessarily have to hire an expert to do this. They can, on their own, find the information.
Exactly. They can definitely find the information on their own, but it's very similar to that example I gave, going to China without a translator. You can spend 3 years learning the language and then figure out how to do business, or you can get a translator and
to
shorten
stand
that process.
Next to you and just tell you.
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah. So
now, what's a mistake you see that people make, like, Do they just think they can do it themselves and they get overwhelmed?
Well, that's the biggest mistake, where they're like, okay, you know, maybe they come to us and they take a look and they're like, this looks great, but you know I can do it myself.
Right.
So they go off and do it themselves. And 3 years later, they're back and they're exactly where they were. So, you know, that's the biggest challenge that we see, where people have the impression that they can do it alone. And it's certainly something they can do, but, you know, I always ask business owners, is that the most effective use of your time?
Right. Now, I remember as a kid, there was a guy who had like infomercials that say, government money, like you can get government money.
He had that jacket over the question mark.
Remember that?
I do. I remember that.
He made it seem very easy.
Yeah,
I just had to buy a book. Is that not how? It's more complicated than that.
It is a little more complex than that. And the thing is, you know, because it is government, there's a process, you know, so everything is totally systematic. And as long as you learn all the steps, then you can certainly get through it yourself. And the founder of the association, I mean, it's been around for 6 years, but we've only started this past year, the entire group coming together as a team and really marketing and starting to hold monthly meetings and do weekly trainings and different things of that nature. But he spent that first 5 years literally creating that blueprint, if you will. So he created the manuals and all that stuff that we use as the basis of our curriculum and the first contract program that we have that's coming up next week, and all the stuff that we do to help to educate business owners and move them into the government marketplace.
Now, are there certain industries that are better than others to work with the government? Like you mentioned, janitorial.
Right.
So like you think in your mind, if you go, anybody who has a janitorial service should at least take a shot at this. Like there's money to be had there if they would just put a little bit of effort there.
Exactly. There, of course, the government buys everything, literally from toothpicks to jet planes. So, you know, maybe, you know, not stripper poles, but
you never know. They could be doing research.
But there's pretty much no business that's a bad business in the government space. But there are some that are particularly better suited for government.
Right. Can you share some of those?
Janitorial is definitely one of those. I mean,
they got to clean every office.
There's
a million. They are in a million buildings, million offices.
Exactly. And the government has more buildings than anyone in the world. So, and think about if you want to take your business international, then everywhere there's an embassy or a military installation.
Right.
Generally, they're going to be janitorial services.
What's like an unusual one that you've found?
Well, I got one because I had a job. I was supposed to be for the whole summer and I got fired after the first day. But still, it has some bearing on this conversation. And the job was at an Air Force base. I went and helped this teacher, you know, had like a side job, install blinds at an Air Force. But I mean, there's a lot of windows at an Air Force base, and there's a lot of I wasn't too good at it and all that. But I mean, that's just, you don't think about stuff like that, but and they needed new blinds on every window.
And I guess the most unusual would be like a large animal veterinarian. I mean, because the Department of Interior, they kind of handle all of the spaces, like the forestry and all those different areas. So if you are, you know, our veterinarian that deals with horses and wild horses and all that, then that's kind of an unusual one.
Right. So you wouldn't even think about it. You're going about your business.
Right.
Right.
Right. You're dealing with the farms or the ranchers or the whatever, and not even thinking that, wow, there's a whole segment of the government that may need my services.
Now, can we just do a little play acting here? Like, let's pretend that Business Radio X, we do business interviews.
Uh-huh.
Like, how would you kind of coach us up on approaching this if we were interested or to even explore if this is something that is that too hard? I'm putting you on the spot.
No, I mean, that is interesting.
I could do Adam's business.
After you learn how to pronounce his last name.
I can't pronounce. That's why I called him Adam.
He's just Adam with soul. That's his name.
That's generally what happens.
So, but yeah, I'll start with this challenge and then we can move to Adam's, which I'm sure is going to be a little easier.
He has a design for it.
She's basically telling you, just forget it. Don't do it.
No, but with your business, any kind of government agency that does public service announcements or has different spots?
Say we're a communications vehicle to help get the word out about all the government programs.
Right.
So they have to get the word out about all the things they offer. So we could be a place where they do that, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of military services installations do different PSAs, especially when it comes to recruitment times for you know, trying to get people into the armed forces. So there are a ton of opportunities. Every time the CDC has something going on.
Right. They got to get the word out.
Right. So, yeah.
Okay, so now, so you know this, you kind of formulated at least roughly in your head, like, so how would you coach us, or what would be the questions you would have to know, ask us, or?
The best thing that we coach a brand new business starting out is encouraging them to become a member of the association.
Okay.
And they can do that for a low monthly fee of like $49 a month, or they can do it annually at $499 a year.
Okay.
So with that, they get to come to our weekly trainings that we do in Atlanta, and we do like record those. So if you are not in the metro Atlanta area,
still get the information.
You can still get the information, right. We've got weekly webinars. We've got monthly association meetings.
So that fee lets me get as much kind of education as I'd like.
Exactly.
But it's like a fire hose, though. This isn't like, I'm not sipping information here. I'm like just drowning in information,
yes.
Right?
That's the analogy I use all the time.
So I need more, like, you know how sometimes you need help, but sometimes you need a helper? I need a helper. So can you help me with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so now I can, in addition to this, so I get to be in the club for like $500 a year, but if I need more help, I can
Do one-on-one. We've got one-on-one coaching. And then, like I said, we've got a first contract program that's starting up next week, and that's really exciting. We've got two different tracks. One is called the first contract, and the program is designed to do exactly that. Get somebody, a business owner that comes into the program, from where they are to their very first government contract.
And then how long is that?
That's a 12-month program.
So it takes me a year to even...
Well, it may not take a year. We've got folks in our coaching program that have won contracts after 3 months.
That's your record, personal best, months?
Yeah, that's our personal best. And, you know, she was just very aggressive, though. So she came to a boot camp, a weekend, a two-day boot camp, and talk about a fire hose, where literally we just spray our people with information for 2 days. And, you know, she just went running from there and was able to win a contract. It turned out it was going to be a multi-year award. And generally, that's how government works, where the contract is a five-year contract. You're awarded the first year, and then you got the four option years.
And that's the government option, or both parties' option?
That's generally the government's option, right.
So then not only do you have to deliver the service, you have to, you know, kind of give them back feedback or exactly. results that say, look, I did what I said I would do, and we got the results that we were trying for.
Absolutely. That's part of the ongoing compliance part, where you've got to meet all the regulations according to what they call the FAR, which is the Bible of Government Contracting, the Federal Acquisition Regulation. So there's a ton to learn, but, you know, we're there as your guide and teacher. And like I said, you can either get the information pieced to you weekly in classes, or do one-on-ones with coaching programs, or, you know, one-to-many, where you have the incubator programs that we have.
Is there a rating system after you get that first one? And so now you're doing some janitorial work, or hanging blinds, or doing communications. Do you get some sort of track record report card, so that when you go after the next one and the next one, they say, hey, these guys do a good job, kind of thing?
Well, there's...
Like Yelp.
There's something
called... Yelp? Is there a government Yelp?
There is an excluded parties list that you don't
want to
be
on that.
Right.
That's not the list you want.
That's called the blacklist. So, yeah, you don't want to be on
that.
So there really
is
one of those. Yeah, so really bad performers get put on the blacklist. So you don't want to be one of those. But, you know, your past performance is something that you would put on your own capability statement, so that the next time you want to go after a contract and you're talking to a contracting officer, you're presenting them with a history of your past performance. Which is, again, is very different than corporate, where you don't give them a brochure because they look at you like you've got two heads. You know, they're like, well, tell me what you did for another client that looked just like me yesterday.
Right.
So that's what they want to see.
Now, is when you're getting this kind of work, is it possible to go to a government agency, the right one, and say, hey, I have an idea for you that will do this? Or is it always, we're looking for... you know, red-haired firemen. And so that's all I care about is red-haired firemen.
Right.
So, like...
Generally, they look for red-haired firemen, and that's all they want.
And you just got to figure out how to make your company a match to whatever they're looking for.
There are instances, however, and this is usually for the more seasoned businesses, and this is kind of a more advanced technique that we teach to others that have already gotten their feet wet in the government space, where you can actually, you know, prepare a proposal based on a need that you see.
Right.
You know, where, let's say, you're in your business and you're writing white papers or case studies about other agencies that you've assisted and how maybe you've, you know, increased productivity or performance or saved millions of dollars or what have you, and then present that to other agencies. One of my clients has successfully done that. She does a lot of work with military installations, Department of Navy in particular, and because of all the white papers they've written, they've been recognized by other admirals and agencies that are now approaching them about creating those solutions, and they you know, kind of solicit business that way.
But that sounds like that's the exception. Like the 80-20 rule,
right,
mostly,
right,
is you're just...
Absolutely.
Somewhere there's a list of all of the needs of the government?
Absolutely. The big list that everyone in the space kind of knows about is FBO, the Federal Biz Opportunities.
Right.
Well, FedBizOps is what the website is, or just www.fbo.gov. And that's where all of the opportunities are listed. So at any point in time, you'll see 32,000
different
opportunities.
Wow.
Right.
And any given day.
And on any given day, you can go in there. And then, of course, you know, you just have to literally, you know, just siphon it down and sort. And everything in the government is by NAICS code, which is your North American Industry Classification System code. And again, governees is all acronyms, so you got to learn a ton of them. So, but you just sort by the NAICS code that identifies your particular niche or industry, and then, you know, you can whittle that 32,000 down to a couple hundred, and then you just need to go sorting from there.
And then from there, it'll say, okay, this is where the proposal lives, and then I download it or print it, and then
exactly
see if I meet those qualifications.
See if you meet the qualifications, you know, read the 50-page document. I mean, they don't make anything easy. It's not like a 2 or 3 page thing, right?
Well, they're right, because there's a bunch of people looking, so you gotta weed them out.
I really think some of this is literally, okay, let's see how bad they want
it. If they really want it, right. So the membership, is there, so there's these companies, like maybe ours, that wants to get the work. Is there also a level of membership or a type of membership for, I don't know what you would call them, other kinds of service providers, like a lawyer comes to mind, and do they join like a contract specialist type person or whatever?
We do have affinity partners as well that are members of our organization. And generally, our membership are small businesses, you know, because there are a lot of different opportunities available for small, what the government calls disadvantaged businesses. So whether that's women, minorities, veterans, service-disabled veterans.
I bet we have some disadvantage. I bet we have plenty. We just have to find a way to capitalize on it, Lee.
Exactly.
But, you know, a lot of our affinity members are larger businesses or majority-owned firms that that either need to meet minority participation goals if they are government contractors themselves, or they serve the needs of small businesses that are doing government contracting. We've got a bonding company, for instance, that's a great affinity partner, another that does employer services, you know, so when you get these government contracts, there's a whole bunch of regulations associated with wage determination. So they help with all the benefits and different things associated with that.
Now, when you're working with a client, do they ever ask, like, you're getting in there and you've kind of made some inroads? Like how do you manage their expectations of how long this whole process is going
to... Oh, yeah, that's one that I have to do. And literally a client popped into my mind as you said that, because, you know, we tell people all the time that, you know, the arbitrary thing about what we do is that we can't guarantee anything. Now, we've got a great track record over the past 6 years. We know that literally we've created the blueprint. If you follow it, if you do what we tell you to do, you will win a contract. But we can't guarantee that because we're not the contracting officers. We don't have the authority.
Right, you're not choosing.
Right. We don't have the authority to bind the government
for
anything.
Help them get it as right as they can be.
Exactly.
But ultimately, the government makes the decision.
Right, right. But as far as managing expectations, we just let people know that, you know, when you get, whether it's a certification or you go through our training, none of this is manna from heaven. You're still going to have to do the work and put in the time to kind of make it happen for yourself. So, but we're there to guide you and point you where to go. We know different contracting officers. We've got relationships with different agencies, so we can point them in the right direction.
Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you're dealing with a human being.
Right.
Like, there might be a lot of bureaucracy, but it's still a person.
Absolutely.
That you know, they're trying to solve a problem and they hope you're the right person. It's not like they want to say no. They're looking to solve the problem. They don't want to have 32,000 if they can have 31,999.
You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, they would rather not sort through 100 proposals and read, you know, of course, if the solicitation is 50 pages, your proposal is 35. They don't want to read 100 of those. So, you know, at the end of the day, the contracting officer is a person and it's about establishing relationships. That's the most important thing in contracting. But, you know, you just have to do it by the book, literally by the far, or you can end up in jail.
Right.
That's the downside.
I hadn't thought about that consequence. I just thought about maybe not getting the contract. Priorities, strategic objectives for, like, I don't know what the window would be, the next year, 18 months for you guys as an association. Do you have some focal points?
Yeah, we definitely want to grow our membership. And then we're really excited to be launching a mobilization fund to help clients, because, you know, what we tried to do as an organization is identify every challenge that a small business has when they're trying to enter the federal space. You know, maybe they don't know how to write proposals. They don't have, you know, the capital they need. And I know, I was a banker for years. You walk in with a contract for $1 million to the banker and they look at you funny, because I did that for a client. I'm like, this is great, but I lend money looking in the rearview mirror at what you did last year, not what you've got coming forward. So we understand all of the challenges that small businesses face, and we've literally put in place within the association resources that meet all those needs. So we're really excited about growing the membership and getting more participation in our first contract and our incubator programs, and also launching the mobilization fund, where we've got private investors that can help assist, and we do the vetting of the businesses and the contracts and all that to give them the comfort level they need to lend that initial money you need to get the contract started.
Now, there's also a lot of opportunity, I would imagine, for minorities, women, veterans, that they might necessarily be the main person that gets the account, but they can do a subset of the account.
Right.
So that's like kind of the Russian nesting dolls, where like somebody else gets it, but I do an aspect of it, or me being involved helps them get it.
Absolutely. Gosh, y'all know a lot about this whole thing.
We're learning together here. That's the way I look at it.
Yes. But there's a lot of opportunity for subcontracting, teaming, joint ventures. Those are things that are done often in the government space. And particularly when you're working with, let's say if you're subcontracting as a small business to a large company like a Northrop Grumman or Lockheed Martin, where they do a lot of government contracting. The majority of their business is in the federal space. And as a result, they're required to subcontract a certain portion of their business to certain categories, whether that's veterans or women or minority business owners. So, that's one way definitely to expand your business, and an easier way to segue into the federal market.
So that might be the easiest way to get your first contract. That's by being a partner in. And then once you're in there, you're kind of blessed by the government at that point, right?
If you don't screw it up, you still got to do the work.
Yeah, right?
Still
not on the black one. You don't want to be on the blacklist.
Right. So you don't want to get on the blacklist. You still have to do the work. And then, of course, you kind of have the opportunity to start building that relationship with the contracting officer and the people that make the decisions, so they know your work and that you can do what you say you're going to do.
For
and
either next time with this one firm or maybe directly to the government.
Absolutely.
Because now you've kind of proven yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What a marvelous resource. I mean, for $500 a year, you ought to pay that before you pay the light bill. If you have, before that just makes all. And to have a recovering banker in your corner to coach you through all this, right?
I love that, the recovering banker. Yes.
Oh, man, that's terrific. All right. So where can our listeners go to learn more, have a conversation with you, and get tapped into this?
Yes. Especially the dates and of the upcoming events.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They for any of our upcoming events, they're all posted on govevent.com. That's govevent.com. So they can check out all of our events, our webinars, our Tuesday events, our monthly association meetings, boot camps, upcoming everything. And then, of course, they can reach us by phone at 404-955-8080. That's 404-955-8080. And that number, that's the office line. It rolls either to the founder, Abraham Seung, or to me directly.
And then are these events always in Atlanta or are they all over?
They're always in Atlanta. We are trying to take our show on the road and just trying to figure out, find the right strategic partners to be able to do that. So we've got one of our business development folks is trying to work on now making that happen in other areas.
And you've got stuff going on like almost every week, month. You
literally
have like Margarita Mondays.
We've got Wednesday webinars and every Tuesday, literally every Tuesday at our building. If you show up there at 6 o'clock, we're going to be there doing something. And we've got wine often. So
y'all thought I was kidding. Well, it's been an absolute delight having you back in the studio. And I just get the sense you guys have so much going. There may be some wisdom in having you come back on a more regular rhythm.
Oh, I would love that.
Of your team and just get us caught up on what you're
absolutely on
what you're doing.
And have all the different players come in. Because like I said, we've got a whole team that you know, has expertise in pretty much every area needed to help the prospective government contractor be successful.
You like that idea? I do.
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's one of those things that are obvious once you talk about it, but the typical business person doesn't even consider it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then it's a date. We're going to make that happen.
Listen,
can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I would love to.
His name is Adam. I'm going to let him tell you his last name, but he's a big deal over here at this Soul outfit. Okay. They're creative solutions for an interactive world. Please welcome to the broadcast, Adam. You can tell him your last name.
Yeah, Rosenketter. You were not too far off the first time.
No, the way you say it is very clear. The way you spell it isn't so much.
Is not.
It's that O.
It's the umlaut that used to be there.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, they removed that when they came to the United States, and that messed everything up.
That's what you threw me. Otherwise,
we had a guest, I swear to you. Well, was it 2 weeks ago?
I know what you're going.
Thing happened to his family. His last name is
they took it from
Edelman.
But it's not.
But it's not that.
It's not spelled like that.
But it was spelled with whatever that thing you said.
The umlaut.
Yeah, it was in there somewhere. And it was pronounced different, but you know, when they came here, that you know, they're not.
Yeah,
we're not putting those things on top.
We don't have umlauts here,
right? Yeah. There's no spot on my typewriter for that.
Right.
Adam thought he was coming in to talk about his business. He didn't know he was coming in just to get ripped.
Ancestry.com sent me.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about Soul Design. What are you guys up to?
So we started in 2001. We're a full service marketing agency, and you know, we started with two people. The concept was to bring together top-notch strategy.
Were you one of the two people?
I was. Top-notch strategy and design and technology. My side's the technology side. So, you know, my background's in web development. My business partner's background was on the creative and strategy side.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of the original intent. And then over the years, we've morphed. You know, we've worked in just about every sector, not government so much. we've unsuccessfully been on government jobs, but not done a lot there.
You've tried though.
We have, you know, and the same kind of thing where you're going after an RFP and you're putting a proposal forward and you end up not getting it and you have no idea why.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you just know you didn't get it.
Great. So you can use that for next time.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we have morphed over the years and really pulled in three primary areas that we work the most in. And that really was sort of we started working in these different sectors and found, hey, we have really good knowledge. We have really good skills in these areas. And then we've sort of built up our experience over the years. So those areas are in B2B marketing, so business to business marketing. And that goes across lots of sectors. So technology, manufacturing, distribution. Often it's companies that have great products. They do a great job for their customers, but they don't really know how to market or have thought they didn't need to market effectively to their customers.
Because they get all referrals.
Yeah.
They don't have to market.
That's right. That's what they think. And the thing is that they may not understand is that you do have to market. And if you want to set yourself above the competitors, you need to do it well.
Right.
You need to present
saying? If you're not branding, you're branding because someone's going to be branding for you, right?
That's right. You know, so you don't want that to happen. And so that's where we do a lot of our work. I'd say that's, you know, probably 70% of our work goes into that area. And then we do a lot of work with nonprofits and foundations, notably quite a few in Atlanta, like the Clean Air Campaign, Captain Planet Foundation, Andrews Family Fund in New York. So we do a lot of work in that area. We like working in that segment quite a bit. And we'll do stuff that can be marketing, it can be web development, application development, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last segment is really gets on the education side, which can also cross over into nonprofits. So that's sometimes education startups, or it could be nonprofits that have an education segment like the Clean Air Campaign does.
Mm-hmm.
So as a small business, I got to ask this question. Are your clients paying you on time? Have you cracked the code for that, man?
sometimes they're paying you on time. It tends to be that the bigger the customer, the slower exactly. you pay. So we've got some really great paying.
I've felt that pain before.
Yeah, it can be painful. So often the mid-sized small companies that are our customers will pay great on time, right. every time. And then the bigger the corporation you're working with, usually the slower that goes. And sometimes it's established. They tell you up front, hey, right. we're not going to pay for 60 days. That's just the way we work. And so that does get painful sometimes, yeah.
Well, you know why I ask, because I want to hear about this Fundbox thing.
Yep. So we had gone the route previously of, you know, traditional credit line or getting a bank loan. And the problem with a lot of that is that, you know, it's a personal guarantee, but they can go beyond that for a small business without a lot of track history. And so you end up having to put your house on the line. You know, it's a complicated, long, drawn out, paperwork heavy process. And then I stumbled across Fundbox. I can't even remember how I came across it, but it's a service that integrates directly with QuickBooks and QuickBooks Online, which we've used for years. And it really basically allows you to clear receivables earlier. So essentially, you're getting the money up front for an invoice that you just sent out that you may not get for 30 days or 60 days or hopefully right. not 90 days, but potentially a lot longer. And so that gives us that cash that we can use for actually doing the work that we need to do for the customer and leaves us not completely cash strapped. And so that, I liked the way that it worked in that, you know, you're essentially saying, okay, it's not based on my personal credit. This is based on the work that I'm doing and my receivables that are out there.
So now what's your relationship with Fundbox?
None other than that I'm a customer of them.
So you just like them?
I just like them. Yeah.
So you've used them in your business?
Yep. So I've used them for about the last 8 months or so. Prior to that, we did more kind of the traditional route of...
So you went to a bank,
go through the whole process, jump through some hoops, and you know, eventually you get a credit line that may or may not really suit what you need.
Any comment on that, Myra? You're the
preaching
the banker.
To the choir.
the recovering banker.
So in the creative space, what is recruiting like? Because to me, recruiting, selection, development is one of the things that we're getting better at. We're learning together, as Lee says. And to me, I wonder if it's not even more difficult in your world to really identify good talent, talent that fits. What is that like for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, some of it can start with, you know, there are specific universities and schools that we know tend to produce really good people.
Right.
SCAD is one of those. And, you know, there's an Atlanta campus for that. And we've had a lot of luck with SCAD. So in some ways, if you can get a tie-in with a university that you've had some really good luck in the past with, and then you can connect with people there, you know, professors who can give actual, say, this person's great and they're coming out, you know, this month. That's the best way because we're getting a personal referral.
Right.
And, you know, to me, you can get some really quality people out of school if it's a good school. I've had the reverse happen where you go to some other school. I'm not going to mention any names.
What does it rhyme with?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. But, you know, and they come out and they're supposed to know their stuff and they simply don't.
Right. So now they're learning on your dime.
They're learning on my dime. You know, and if someone's an intern, that's fine. Right. It's not okay if you're bringing them in as like a graphic designer. You know, I can't afford to have graphic designers that are learning while they're doing work for clients, right. you know, so it does become difficult. We've made some good inroads with SCAD and Georgia Tech that help that process a good bit. And I am naming Georgia Tech. They do a good job. They produce some good people.
They're not on the blacklist.
They're not on the blacklist for me. No.
But the other thing that I see, I have a tendency to identify potential challenges pretty quickly. Yeah. But it seems to me like as you're working with a client that you could get caught up in, one of my mentors would call bring me a rock, right? So Business Radio X becomes a client of yours, and we have some rough vision of what we think we want and need. Mm-hmm. And getting us to articulate it properly, and then you bringing us something, and that's not at all what we meant. And then you're spending money on these graphic designs. Do you have some structure, methodology, you know, the Adam index for how this gets done properly?
Yeah, you know, a lot of what, the reason you can end up with where I brought you a rock and you're like, that's not the rock I asked for, right. is because we didn't ask the right questions up front and we didn't go through an actual process. And so there is a process that, you know, the creative process or the strategy process that you do need to go through that people often skip or want to skip and we don't let them skip. And so it starts with even just, you know, a meeting and questionnaire that we ask seemingly random questions to get an idea of your aesthetic if we're doing design work or an idea for what your challenges are from a marketing perspective so that we can craft this solution for whatever it is your problem is. And that process can take a little while, but it saves time down the road. And so it's much better to spend an upfront time of a couple of weeks or a month or longer if you need to understand what the client actually needs. Or they may not really know what they need, but through some investigative work and through, you know, kind of doing some research, you can come up with what they actually need that would help them sell their products and services better.
Yeah, I bet they don't have answers to a lot of your questions to begin with. We had that experience. We start asking them about who they serve and that. Mm-hmm. We're sometimes surprised. People haven't really thought some of that stuff through, have they?
No. And a lot of times if you ask them, you know, what do you do or what does your business do or what's your mission statement? You know, it's like, chirp. You know, or you'd ask one person at the company and you ask somebody else and they're totally different
answers. That's even worse.
It's worse.
Right.
And that happens in big companies. You can get the same. And so part of what we'll do is get everybody on the same page so that if they go into an elevator, they literally have the same elevator speech. Right. And it should distill what it is they actually do better than everyone else, what their competitive advantage is. And it shouldn't just be, you know, we sell widgets.
Right.
You know, so it needs to really.
What's your competitive advantage? I'll put you on the spot.
Sure. I mean, I think part of it's experience in specific sectors, right? So B2B marketing, for example, is significantly different than business to consumer marketing.
Right.
We're not saying we do B2C marketing. We do B2B marketing
you
really well.
You can't do a billboard that says, just do it for a B2B client.
We could, but it's not probably going to be effective.
It's very effective.
Right. So a lot of it does come down to experience and having seen what works. The other side of it is that we bring together a really wide spectrum of talents that go across from the kind of the true strategy and writing side into the creative side and then all the way into technology and then marrying them. And what we've always thought is that there are lots of companies that say that they do all of that, but there's not that many that actually do all those things well where they actually come together as one cohesive strategy. So that's where we feel like we do actually have a competitive advantage. It is sometimes a challenge to differentiate that from someone who says that they do.
Right.
So you show that through your work.
Sure.
And
well,
your
that's
experience.
The beauty of your business is that all your work is published.
Yes.
You know?
It's published. Yeah. And even better, if you can show true return on marketing investment, it's easier to go in and say, look, hey, we took this company from here to here, and then they were sold for X million dollars.
Right.
Someone say, oh, okay.
Well, so you must know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, design is in the name of your company. Do you find yourself being a design company first or a marketing company first?
So we've kind of morphed that into a marketing company first. I think when we started, it was more
design-centric.
And really what it comes down to is we're always going to be doing marketing, whatever that piece of thing, you know, whatever that thing is. It could be a billboard. It could be a website. It could be an app. It could be social media marketing. It's all marketing. And we do put a lot of concentration on the actual design. And sometimes that's the design of whatever that piece is.
But I think that that's a great point in this, that there's a lot of people that can tactically do things.
Sure.
But they don't do it in an elegant manner. Mm-hmm. And if it sounds like your firm is very, at least conscious about, I'm going to try to do this, whatever we do, whether we're helping you with, you know, getting the most out of your marketing automation tool, or, you know, your content strategy, we're going to do this with some elegance, that we're going to keep an eye on aesthetics, and it's going to kind of look and feel good too.
Yeah, that, and I think the other big piece is having an actual strategy before you start implementation. Mm-hmm. So instead, you know, there's a lot of companies you can say, I need a logo, and they'll just like, hey, I'll design you a logo. But if you're just, you know, throwing out a mark that has nothing to do with the strategy behind who they're actually selling to, then to me, you're not doing your job.
Well, I think it's also that a lot of the elements of a marketing firm, you can go to Fiverr and get a logo.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So if you're working with a firm, I would want that kind of full service. They're going to really immerse themselves so they can serve me the best, so they can really be a partner, not a vendor.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. I mean, that we try to partner with all of our customers. And the biggest opportunity to do that is when they say, you know, we really need help with all of these things. And that's great when we're like, okay, we can help with everything. We don't often get that chance. So sometimes we'll come in as doing one thing.
Right.
And then we kind of
Initial conversation. It might be a project. Right. It might be, hey, solve this one problem.
Right. And then we kind of show them where we can be of help for other things. So kind of the same idea as, you know, first government contract. Okay, got the first one. I got my foot in the door. Now let me show you what else can be done here.
So now you think that's a good marketing tactic on her part to help with the first one and to really educate, because that opens the door for the second, third, and fourth one.
Exactly. And the same thing when you're working in any business sector. I mean, a lot of times you'll run down a specific industry, and the reason that you get chosen sometimes is because you have extensive experience in this one industry, but you got to get your first one
right
first. And then you have the opportunity to show, oh, this worked and you can use me for this too.
So now you mentioned B2B. That's a point of emphasis for your firm.
Yep.
Kind of social good, nonprofits. That's another area of specialty, and education. Do you have a personal favorite, or you know, you don't like to choose?
I mean,
between your
you know, this being broadcast all over the world and recorded, that you want to share?
Yeah. So we like working with all of our customers, I will say. I do have an affinity, and I think we all do have an affinity for nonprofits, just because if you're getting to work with an organization that is really trying to do good, it's trying to improve things across whatever area they work. That's fun to be involved in, and to help them achieve their mission, I think, is really powerful. So we love that work. You know, we'd love to do more of our work. And so we strive to help more and more nonprofits as we can.
And then I would imagine the more B2B customers you have and the more education customers, the more you can do of the social good.
That's right. I mean, you tend to, you know, you're talking about a big corporation. They're going to have a little more funds available than a small nonprofit that's grassroots. Yeah.
And B2B, any specific verticals that you guys spend more of your time on?
We spend quite a bit of time in technology, so that's software and hardware. We spend quite a bit of time in manufacturing, so that can be across furniture, building goods, molding, doors. It doesn't sound real sexy, but you can do a great job in helping them differentiate from the other kind of commodity players in the market. So you know, let's say someone's selling a door at Home Depot. Well, you want to be the door they choose, right?
Right.
You know, and so differentiating is sometimes a challenge. And so you have to kind of really think that all the way through. And that does end up to the consumer, right? Even though their customer might be Home Depot.
Right.
It ends up going to the customer. So you do have to think through the entire process.
And then you mentioned a lot of digital work. Do you do kind of trade shows, conferences, and that kind of work as well?
Yeah, we do. I mean, typically that we wouldn't come in for a trade show project. But as part of the marketing for one of our customers, we would absolutely do trade show booth design. We could do, you know, interactive booth design, things like that.
So you've done that in the past?
We've done that in the past, yes.
So with regard to your own sales and marketing, I grew up with a guy who fixes air conditioners in his own air conditioner in his own house. Like, this is like the worst one, right?
Yeah.
And his wife's always complaining. But I'm anxious to hear, like, your sales and marketing process. You just exude credibility. You clearly know what you're doing. You're the kind of person that we all want to work with, but we've hung out with you for 10 or 15 minutes. We've had a conversation. Your own sales and marketing process, does your phone just ring, or do you have to find ways to have this conversation with the tech folks, with the, you know, with these different clients, with the nonprofits? How does that work for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is sometimes the phone does just ring, and that's great. And some of our marketing does work. I mean, we do a good bit on social media marketing, which we found to be very effective, and publishing our own content that drives people on a specific subject back to us because we're experts in this one thing.
So you're pushing out kind of education that is giving you credibility. And that is, when someone's looking for that, I want to go to the person who wrote the article.
That's right. That's right. And you know, and we've not always done a great job of that, because you get busy doing customer work.
Right.
You know, no one's paying us to do that part, but it's really important.
Right.
And so it's finding the time to actually generate your own content, to publish it, to get it out on social media, to send it out via email. And yeah, we struggle with the time to get that all done, but it's extremely important so that we can continue to gain good customers.
Because that's the advice you give your clients.
Exactly. We have to do for ourselves the same thing we do for our customers.
You got to eat your own cooking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it's tough. I mean, it's like hard. My buddy with the air conditioner. I mean, seriously, that's the last one he fixes, right?
Yep, yeah. And it took us like a year to redo our website because it was like, okay, we'll fit it in like 1 hour this week, you know? And then eventually we got it all done. But the other thing of that is we're all constantly critiquing our own work.
Right.
So when it's your own website, you're ripping it apart, start over again. So it takes you a long time to get something done.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more and have a substantive conversation, website for you guys?
Yep, soldesignco.com. That's soldesignco.com. Or they can give me a call, 404-500-3160.
And then on your website, is there any free information where the people can just kind of learn about?
Well, off our blog, definitely. Blog? Yeah, I mean, you can definitely get good content there that are, you know, goes back on a lot of different variety of subjects. You know, to go deeper on any, if something very specific to a customer, I'd suggest contacting us or fill out the contact form or give us a call. And then we can give you specific case studies or things like that that might be right. helpful to kind of help you solve whatever issue you're having.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
And thank you, Myra.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.